I like trying to look at very well-known events from a little bit different perspective so that we gain some appreciation or so that we have some more depth to our understanding of it. And with the Christmas story, it can get rehashed so many times that we think we know it all so well. But this morning we're going to look at it from a little bit different perspective, that of Christ as King. And that's why I especially appreciated Glory Bound song 2 about the King Jesus who was born in Bethlehem. And that was a beautiful song. I really appreciated that. And as we look at Matthew 2, we're going to focus on Christ and his kingship. This child that is born is of heavenly royalty as opposed to an earthly pedigree. And we will see what the implications are of this. So in Matthew 2, let's focus in on some of the people that are influenced by the coming of Jesus, where it says in verse 1, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet has spoken. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel. Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem, and he said, go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. We're going to start this morning by looking at these magi, these wise men, as they are called. And they're interesting characters. Many have portrayed them as being rulers, kings who travel to visit with King Jesus, this newborn babe. That's not likely the case. They probably were not dignitaries. They were, however, most likely astrologers. They were individuals who studied the skies, and it was probably combined with an Eastern religion of some sort, thinking that the stars have some kind of influence upon our lives. This would explain why they reacted so strongly to the appearance of a celestial happening, this star, as it were. Now, astronomers have thought that perhaps the star that they saw was a convergence of three planets. And the Lord could have used this. To the naked eye of the time, this would have appeared like a superstar. Its brightness and the convergence of these things would have been a massive thing in the sky. And they would have read this as a portent. Something is happening of huge significance in the east, in the west. So they come from the east traveling to the west. And these guys are prepared for something big to happen. They are following the signs in the heavens. They believe that it is leading them to something significant, and they bring very, very monumental gifts, very expensive gifts. So they know that there has been an event that has taken place, and from the sounds of it, they know it's a birth of someone. Now, what's interesting about this is that these men whom are memorialized in the song, We Three Kings of Orient Are, you know, and they come to see this king who is born. Jesus is already attracting individuals from an international stage to come and to worship him. And they are very explicit about the fact that they have come to worship him. If you take a look in chapter 2, verse 2, where is the one who's been born king of the Jews? So they have figured this out. We have seen his star in the east, and we have come to worship him. So this is a beautiful testimony to the fact that Christ the King, as he comes into the world, part of his purpose is to draw people from different cultures, to bring people from around the globe toward him, because he is the source of salvation. And God the Father uses this star, this sign in the heavens, to bring these people. And they are reacting properly to Christ. They're just like the shepherds. They're fascinated, they're amazed, they're impressed, and they come to Jesus in order to find worship in him. And that's precisely what we are doing this morning too. It's the correct thing to do when we hear about Christ is to come and offer him our worship and praise, because he is the world's Messiah. Now, there are other individuals that are not going to react very well to this, and one of them is King Herod. And this touches upon the fact that Christ is going to be a king. Herod cannot stand this concept. In fact, as you take a look at what's happening here, Herod pumps the Magi, tries to get information out of them, and he actually clandestinely sends them on a mission to try to find out where this Christ child is. And of course, he is lying as long as the day when he says to them in verse 8, go to Bethlehem, go make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I can go worship. Yeah, right. What he is going to do is he is going to eliminate the competition. You see, King Herod historically was a very important character. In secular accounts of what he did, there is no doubt that the man accomplished some outstanding things. In history, we know that King Herod had brought water supplies to Jerusalem. He had built rebuilt the fantastic temple that stood in Jerusalem. It was called Herod's Temple. This was the one that was standing at the time of Jesus' public ministry. It was a fantastic structure. He also established cities such as Caesarea by the sea. He built huge fortresses in the desert. One was called the Herodian. The other one you might be more familiar with, it was called Masada. The man had accomplished fantastic things as a ruler. However, in the scriptures, when a king is assessed, he's not assessed according to his secular accomplishments or his architectural feats. A king is assessed whether he walks with God and rules justly or not. And in this particular case, Herod fails the test. He was a decadent ruler. And worse than that, he was megalomaniacal. Love that word. One of those words you can throw around and sound like you know what you're talking about. Megalomaniacal. He had delusions of grandeur, and he was paranoid about it. In fact, he was so fearful of his grip on power that he ended up killing his own wife and several of his children because he thought they might be threats to the throne. See? This is the kind of man we're dealing with. He will stop at nothing to retain his power. And so when he finds out that Jesus is born in Bethlehem, he is definitely on the warpath. He is going to try to eliminate Jesus because he is not going to have any contention to his rule. And that's why he sends the Magi off, hoping that they will lead him to this Christ and eliminate him. So you see that, you know, in the middle of this birth account of Jesus, we have quite a bit of intrigue. On the political stage, when Christ comes, there are rulers that are very hostile to God's plan. And they would not think twice about butchering the children in Bethlehem. And that's I thank God that Herod is remembered for that negative action. For all the other outstanding things that he did as a ruler in Jerusalem and in Israel at the time, he is remembered for his killing of the innocents in Bethlehem. Very similar to Judas, who betrayed Jesus. And Judas is always mentioned in the Gospels as the one who betrayed Christ. These people go down in history for their self-serving mindset and for their warped perspective, see? And we need reminders like this because there will always be individuals that will be warped and looking for their own gain and their own agenda. And here comes a reminder for us. Because in every age, it does not matter when, but in every age, there are always rulers, world leaders, individuals who are scary. The world has seen the likes of Hitlers and Pol Pots. We've seen people that would not think twice of murdering millions of individuals, all for their own power and glory and their own cadre of individuals that are leading. And we've seen people bend rules and twist justice and pervert it. And we rightly are concerned if we fear that in our country we might be losing some of our freedoms or our rights. Or we might be concerned because we see in the Middle East some country is developing the nuclear bomb or things like this. And we worry about the influence of these wicked leaders. The world has always had perverse, megalomaniacal leaders. It's had its pharaohs. It's had its Caesars. It's had its dictators. It will in the future have its godless leaders. And in the future, yes, there likely will be more bloodshed and injustice on earth. But the story of Christ is that God came to establish a kingdom under his son Jesus that supersedes time. It supersedes the rule of these people. And these individuals cannot crush it. They cannot stop it. God's intent is to take people from this world where they may suffer tyranny, they may suffer injustice, and to take them to himself in eternal life through Jesus Christ. His kingdom will continue regardless. And Herod had a plan to stop that. And he failed, despite all of his ferocity and animosity toward Christ. He failed. And all these rulers through the years have failed in their effort to snuff out Christianity. And they will continue to fail. Now, behind Herod stands another entity, another individual, and this is really where the battle is being waged. Christ came not just as a soft-spoken, comfy kind of person, but as a warrior, because his battle really is enjoined with Satan. Christ came to defeat Satan. Christ came to take back that which is God's, the people on this earth, which the Lord had created. Satan had put under his thumb. Satan wanted to destroy us. Satan wanted to dominate us. Satan wanted us all rejected of God and cast into hell. He would love nothing more. God had other plans. In fact, if you will take a look at chapter 2, verse 13 and following, we see this plan of Herod that fails. But notice in verse 13, when the Magi leave, it says in verse 13, when they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, he said, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. But you notice that God has worked out his plan. Herod is not going to succeed. Herod is nothing more than a puppet. He is a tool, a blunt tool being used by Satan in order to stop the salvation story. Satan's going to go to all lengths in order to try to halt the progress of salvation and redemption in Jesus. It would be the same as if we had someone that was using a gun in order to try to kill or harm someone else. Well, the person behind Herod, behind this feeble attempt to get Jesus, was the devil, Satan. And Christ came in order to defeat Satan. We know this directly because as Jesus grows up in his public ministry, he speaks about this. He talks about this. In the New Testament, in John chapter 12, in John chapter 16, Jesus refers to him as the prince of this world, the one who thinks he's governing it, the one who is cast out of heaven and now is trying to be the ruler of this world, the prince of this world. Jesus says, is cast out. And later in John 16, he says, the prince of this world now stands condemned because he, the rightful king, has come. And he was going to reverse the effects of sin, reverse the influence of Satan's domain, and take control once again. That's what's happening in Christmas, is that Christ, the true king, is coming to redeem his own. And the battle is between him and Satan. And again, Satan is not going to win. That's the joy that we have at Christmas. And this is a fascinating perspective on what's happening in the nativity in Bethlehem, because the reaction of Jesus is very strong by individuals. The Magi are just so incredibly happy and fascinated and awed by what God is doing, and the star leads them to a worshipful mode. Of course, the mode that we are in this morning because we understand the significance of Jesus. But there's many in the world that hate Christ. And still today, you know there's many that hate Jesus. And they will try to crush and oppose and stop the church. And they will try to put down Christ and make him of nothing. And yet, God's kingdom is going to be built. And it will not be stopped. It will not be stopped by tyrants. It will not be stopped by totalitarians. It will not be stopped by the terrible and the wretched and the ugly and the sinful. It will continue on and on. And that is the great, phenomenal joy of Christmas. Herod was unsuccessful. All of the people that hated him, who even tried to kill him, it was God's plan. They actually put into motion the plan of salvation. So in our day, when we look at the world and we're tempted to get scared and we're tempted to look at people that would oppress us or church, remember, Christ came to bring a spiritual kingdom that no earthly ruler can stop. We have a security in Jesus Christ for salvation that goes beyond anything in space and time. And so the celebration that we have today, when we say Christ is our king, we're not saying Christ is our king because he's going to give us a comfy lifestyle, because he's going to provide a job for us. No, when we're saying Christ is king, we're saying he is the one who came to defeat Satan. He has taken back his own. He has brought us forgiveness of sins. He's redeemed us by his blood. He is wanting to take us to his kingdom eternally. That is something that no matter what you see when you look around at the world, you see trouble and tyrants and all, oh, you can go beyond it. Because Christ is king to redeem us for eternal salvation. And there's not a thing they can do about it. Amen.